You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We've got a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now, a shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and yes, the Kai PA glasses are back, but only while supplies last, and I'm taking some of them. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
Something a little different at the top of the show on a Friday from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday, today the 15th of December. Good as always to have you along, everybody. The Federal Reserve delivered some good news for this economy this week. A, that they are going to keep rates where they are for now. And B, that the consensus among them is for three, count them, three rate cuts next year. Season greetings indeed. All of that said, though, we are still not where the central bank wants us to be, so the when and how of what is going to happen is still very much up in the air. So, in lieu of our usual offering at the top of the show on a Friday, analysis of the week's events, we've gotten a participant in the week's events on the phone. Rafael Bostic is the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta. Dr. Bostic, welcome to the program. It's good to have you back on.
Hi, Kai. It's good to talk with you again.
So, were you guys on Zoom this week for the meeting, or were you in the room?
I was in the room. So, yes, I was there.
Okay. So give me a sense, would you? Because it seems like you are oh so very close to getting done what you wanted to get done. What was the mood?
I know I'm not good about reading moods. What I'll tell you is that I went to the meeting pleased with how the economy had progressed and really looking forward to just making it clear that we are done or very close to done with thinking about increasing rates and want to really just let the economy continue to work and get inflation back down to 2%.
Okay. So with that as the setup, let me play you a piece of tape from this morning. It's your colleague, John Williams, from the New York Fed. He was on CNBC, and here's what he had to say.
Well, first of all, we aren't really talking about rate cuts right now. We're very focused on the question in front of us, which, as Chair Powell said, the question is, have we gotten monetary policy to a sufficiently restrictive stance in order to ensure that inflation comes back down to 2%? That's the question in front of us.
So far be it for me to pit one regional Fed president against another or the chair for that matter. But it does kind of seem like the markets and the mood have taken a turn to where you guys are not only done raising rates, but you're looking at cutting really soon. And President Williams was trying to walk back what the market took it out of the chairman's press conference the other day.
Well, I'm actually where John is on this. I've been saying for a long time, we need to be willing and comfortable being higher for longer. And for me, even with the great progress that we've seen on inflation, and it's come down a lot and faster than I expected, for me, pulling forward the time when we would consider dropping rates is really still quarter three of 2024. That's in my outlook. That's what I have in mind if inflation proceeds as I expect it will. So, there's plenty of time. I'm not looking for anything or expecting anything imminent to happen. We're just going to let the economy keep running and make sure that inflation is well on its way to 2%.
Does it trouble you that the stock market and the bond market don't believe you?
Well, those aren't my metrics. So my metrics are inflation and maximum employment. On the unemployment rate below 4% is a very positive sign. And inflation continuing to drop is important. You know, for me, I think what we've seen over the last year or so is financial markets expecting inflation to move a lot faster than I did. And as a consequence, they're projecting actions that come with that kind of an outlook. And we'll just really have to see what happens. You know, I think in the last year, I thought the economy was going to proceed such that inflation would come down a lot slower than it has. Mm-hmm. It's about a half a percentage point lower than I expected. But you know, financial markets were talking about us cutting last year or this year. And that didn't come to pass either. So we're kind of in a push on this. And we'll see sort of where things progress in the early part of 2024.
How do you make sense then of how we are told consumers are feeling about this economy, which is not great, and the metrics that you all look at? I mean, every time that a regional Fed president or the chair or a member of the Board of Governors goes out to make a speech, you put the headline numbers in your speeches, and those are justifiably good and worth crowing about, but people just don't feel good. And I guess I hate to ask the vibe session question, but there's a vibe out there. The economy's not good. What do you do with that?
Well, you know, I was a psychology major in college, so I do think about this a bit. I think there are really two things going on. The first is that even though the rate of inflation is coming down, prices haven't come down. And so when people go to the grocery store, they still remember when they used to pay a dollar less for a dozen of eggs or all those sort of goods. And that memory lingers long. And then the second thing is, you know, when inflation spiked, wages didn't spike with them. And so many workers, a lot of my staff even, knew that they were falling behind and were worried about that. And that catch up is happening, right? Wage growth now is greater than inflation. But I don't think people feel like they've caught up all the way. And that's just going to take some time. And once we get there, I think we will start to see sentiment improve. But these things don't happen overnight. And we'll really have to just let things work and see where we are 6 and 12 months from now.
You and I spoke in May of this year, and one of the things you said was we are at the beginning of the hard part of taming inflation. So I imagine this is now, we're smack in the middle of the hard part, holding them while people are calling on you to cut?
This is where, you know, I use the words patient, cautious, and resolute. and this is the time when we got to be resolute and make sure that we don't jump to conclusions and declare victory. Look, there's still a ways to go. And, you know, headline inflation is a little above 3%. Core is above 3%. And our target is 2%. So we need to really make sure that we're well on our way. And when we do that, then I'll be feeling a lot better. But I don't feel like we're there right now.
If somebody had told you back at the beginning of this year when things were, you know, grim and the recession was right around the corner, if they had told you that we'd be at the end of 2023 with the economy growing at 5% in Q3 and unemployment at 3.7%, would you have believed them?
Well, I would have been very happy. And I'd say, I'll take it. You know, I've never had a recession in my outlook. So I've always thought that the economy would be more resilient than what we've seen in historical cycles. But this economy has even exceeded my expectations of resilience. And I'm really grateful for that. You know, the return to the workplace by workers, the increase in labor supply and labor force participation has just been a wonderful thing to watch. We're getting reports that workers are even more productive while they're there. And these are things that really bode well for us moving forward. And I'm hopeful they will persist as we get into 2024.
I don't want to get too grandiose about this, but this episode in this economy, the last 2 years, is going to be one of those things that are in the economic history books, just like Paul Volcker and the late 70s, early 80s are. And I guess I wonder whether there's a sense within the Fed, broadly speaking, all the regional presidents as well, that, and this is going to sound really corny, but like history's watching, right? This is going to be in the history books.
Well, history is always watching. And, you know, in this job, we know that there are so many people who are watching what we do and commenting, critiquing, assessing, and that really comes with the territory. For me, I think the thing that people should know is that we've never lost sight of what our targets are, and we've wanted every day to really make sure that we are doing all we can to keep this economy strong by creating a foundation that leads to people being able to make long-term plans and investments in their businesses and in themselves to be maximally productive. And this was a hard one. There wasn't really, or there hasn't been a textbook on how you do policy through a pandemic. But, you know, with the help of all of our contacts and I got a great staff in our building, I think we've done pretty well so far. And we're going to have to continue to do that to get all the way back down to hitting our target.
You know, it's really funny, and I hate to hoist you on your own petard here, but you were speaking there in the past tense. This was a hard one. We did well. And then you change course and you're like, oh no, I got to say it's in the present tense, right?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a journey, and I remember the depths of this. And I really don't feel like we're in the depths of this right now. And so that in that sense, we are past a whole bunch of turbulence, but we still are not all the way there. And the mission is not accomplished. We are not done. And we got to stay resolute and focused on the fact that we got to do what we have to get all the way there.
Rafael Bostic is the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta. Dr. Bostic, thanks for your time, sir. It's always good to talk to you.
It's always a pleasure.
Wall Street today, well, traders took a breather after some Federal Reserve-induced exuberance this week. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The Federal Reserve may not be watching the markets much anyway, but the markets sure do watch the Fed, I'll tell you that. And as I said to Dr. Bostic, they liked what they were seeing this week and jumped on that possibility of 3 rate cuts next year. Stocks rallied pretty much across the board for big profitable companies and for smaller, maybe not so profitable companies too. Riskier assets, crypto, just, you know, for instance, has been gaining as well, all on the assumption that the economy is going to keep chugging along and that the cost of borrowing is going to fall. You know what happens when you assume, though, right? Marketplace's Henry Epp explains this risk-on environment.
It's not exactly the meme stock SPAC NFT mania of early 2021, but recently some investors have been buying more stock in certain kinds of companies.
Technology companies that don't earn any money. They're profitless.
Ross Mayfield is an investment strategy analyst at R.W. Baird. He says those kinds of tech firms make for risky investments because they have to borrow a lot of money to keep going. But if the cost of borrowing falls next year, they could do well, Mayfield says.
If you're a younger, more growth-oriented company, higher rates are a bigger weight and lower rates are a bigger boon.
And buying stock in those companies could be a boon for investors, too. Mayfield says right now, those investors have a lot of money sitting in safer accounts that they could throw into riskier bets.
So there's still fuel for this fire to keep going. There's something like $6 trillion in money market funds right now.
All that stored up cash has investors eager for any sign that the Fed is going to cut rates. So eager they may be hearing things that the Fed isn't actually saying. Things like,
we are 100% done. Don't worry about it. Next time you hear from us and the rates move, they are going down. And by the way, that will be in Q1 2024.
Sarah Kunst is managing director of Clio Capital.
None of those words are coming out of Jerome Powell's mouths, but the market moves like they are.
Investing in riskier companies and assets now could pay off if those rate cut dreams come true, says Mayra Rodriguez Valladares, managing partner at MRV Associates. But
I think that there is a high risk that the investors who are all jumping in right now could be quite exuberant.
They could just as easily get burned in 2024, says Kent Belasco at Marquette University, not just by a change in monetary policy, but geopolitics too.
We've got what's going on in Israel. We've got Ukraine.
Add in a presidential election, and that's a lot of risk. I'm Henry Epp for Marketplace.
You know what's not a risky bet? Listening to David Brancaccio and the gang on the Marketplace Morning Report. Everything you need to know early in the day to start you off right. Check it out. Coming up, you need an idea for a present, perhaps?
In fact, if you Google gift guides, you're going to come up with 255 million Google results.
In fact, some people need all the gift guide help they can get. I'm just saying, present company included. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials ticked up 56 points today, a tenth of 1%, finished at 37,305. The NASDAQ gained 52 points, about a third percent, 14,813. S&P 500 lost about a third of a point. We'll call that flat, flatty, flat, flat, 47 and 19. For the week, the Dow up 2.9%. The NASDAQ climbed 2.8%. The S&P 500 up 2.5%. Record highs all over the place. Darden Restaurants owner Ruth Chris Steakhouse, you say that 10 times fast. The Capital Grill and Olive Garden reported better than expected quarterly earnings today. Among the tidbits on the earnings call, people with household incomes above $200,000 a year were dining out at a higher rate than last year, but still less than they did in the before times. People making below $75,000 a year were eating more out than they did pre-COVID. Out more, I suppose, is how you say that sentence. Darden down almost 0.4% today. Competitor Bloomin' Brands, operator of Outback Steakhouse, and that onion thing they do, fell 0.1% today. Bonds went up. The yield on the 10-year T-note, listen to this. I know I was off yesterday, but this is a big deal. 3.91% on the 10-year. You're listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace. Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by public investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with public investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither public investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's ASCENSUS.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. 0.08ths of a percentage point ain't much, objectively, but you put it in context, it's a whole nother thing. That 0.08ths of a percentage point is how much the average interest rate on a 30-year fixed mortgage dropped this week to 6.95%. That's according to Freddie Mac. And it brings the average below 7% for the first time since August. For people who've been waiting to get into the housing market hurly-burly then, could this tempt them to take the leap? Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes examines the behavioral economics of that 0.08ths of a percentage point.
When the leftmost digit of a number changes, like the mortgage rate did this week, from 703 to 695, there's research that shows we tend to give the change more weight. Simon Blanchard studies financial decision-making as a professor at Georgetown. He says if the left-hand digit stays the same,
it may seem a little bit less of a drop.
So that 7 to 6 change makes this week's mortgage rate dip especially eye-catching. It could also translate to hundreds of dollars in savings for people who are buying now as opposed to a month ago. Redfin chief economist Daryl Fairweather says this could encourage hesitant first-time buyers to get back out there.
Especially people who feel like, oh, I'm so close. I'm like almost there to being able to afford a home.
In Raleigh, North Carolina, real estate broker Cheryl Merritt says she hasn't seen the drop in interest rates affect her business yet. She says part of her job is to educate buyers about what's realistic. And she says those 2 and 3% mortgage rates we saw a couple years ago,
that was an anomaly. We'll probably never see that again. Interest rates on average, if you look at the last 50 plus years, have been about 6 to 7%.
Still, Merritt says, with prices as they are,
affordability is still a huge issue. Even if the rates go down, it still doesn't create the opportunity for everyone.
And those buyers who can afford to start looking might wait to see if mortgage rates keep falling. Economist Daryl Fairweather compares it to bargain hunting.
Like, are you going to buy your winter coat during the winter sale, which is like kind of a good sale? Or are you going to wait until summer when they have like their clearance sale and the winter coat is like now out of fashion?
In the last year or so, people got used to playing this waiting game when it came to mortgage rates, points out Georgetown's Simon Blanchard. So now, he says, they might be willing to wait a little bit longer. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
About a year ago, we talked with Abigail Gomez in Logan, Utah. Like almost half of young adults aged 18 to 29 in this economy, she was living at home with her parents. Still is, as you'll hear, but not for lack of trying. That's the setup for today's installment of our series, Adventures in Housing.
So as of last year when we talked, I was living at home. And as of today, that is still a current situation. I am living at home. A lot of things have happened within the last year that have inhibited my opportunity to move out of my home. But hopefully in the next couple of months, that process will actually move a lot quicker than it has been in the last 2 years. And I will be able to hopefully move out of my home by end of next year. So the opportunity came up to build our own home because my boyfriend got given 2 acres through his grandparents. At the beginning, when we started dating, I was actually looking into buying my own house. But we talked and the opportunity came up where he said, look, I have some land. You can either do this or we can build. And I thought, well, that's great. It'll give me some more time to save my own money. And then we can go in together and live together. And I wouldn't have to, you know, be here with my family. Emotions were high then. I was really excited. I still am, but another side of me is sad just for the fact of when I do move out, we kind of calculated how much I'd have to pay on my end, my half, and it would be about almost 3 times as much as I'm paying right now. So that's the only daunting part of it and why I'm kind of happy it's taken for ever. But at the same time, I'm also ready to, you know, be on my own, have my own bathroom that I don't have to share with 2 children and my older sister. And so a little bit of both mixed emotions. I honestly cannot wait to leave the children and chaos behind. That is the first thing. I'm so ready to leave. But I am so sad to leave my parents. I'm 25 years old now, and this will be my first time ever leaving the house. I love being with my parents, but I am also so ready to just be on my own and have such a peaceful and quiet home. You know, I hear my nephew tossing his toys around, throwing his tantrums and screaming. So ready to not hear that in the background ever.
Abigail Gomez in Logan, Utah. Do us a favor, would you? Tell us about your adventure or adventures in housing. It could be plural. Marketplace.org is where you go to do that. As we have covered on this program before, retailers prepare for this time of year way in advance. What we haven't covered before is another, albeit smaller, industry that also preps for the holiday shopping season months early, the already big and still growing world of gift guides. You've probably seen them everywhere, right? Even the U.S. Mint put out a holiday gift guide this year. Jessica Roy wrote about it for the New York Times. Jessica, welcome to the program. Good to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
So it's not just me, right? This whole gift guide thing has gone just haywire the past couple of years.
Yes, it seems like gift guides are out of control. In fact, if you Google gift guides, you're going to come up with 255 million Google results just in English.
So I don't feel so bad that I've got like 10 tabs worth of gift guides open on my iPad then. I should not feel bad
about
that.
No, they're everywhere.
Okay. Look, if everybody's doing a gift guide, is anybody doing a gift guide? That is to say, it's almost too many choices.
It is a lot of choices, but I think when it comes to gift guides, there are a few ways to figure out what makes a good one, and that can help you figure out who is making the best gift guides. I think what you really want to do is highlight some of the big ticket items that people are talking about that don't always go on sale. So, for example, a lot of women this year are wanting the Dyson Airwrap. That doesn't normally go on sale, but occasionally it'll go on sale around the holidays. And then you're also going to want to think about what the person that you're giving the gift to would really want. What would be something that's meaningful to them? And what is a gift that you could give them that would say something not just about that person, but also about your friendship? So I think thinking about it in those two ways, one, what are the things that are going to be on sale and that you can get a good deal on? And then what are the things that are going to be really meaningful to the other person?
Sorry, I'm just taking notes here. Dyson Airwrap, just because, you know, I have a wife, I have to buy stuff for.
She'll be very happy okay. if you get her one.
Good. All right. Well, look, that takes care of this whole interview then. I'm kind of done. But look, it's work for companies and individuals and magazines. Putting these together is a business proposition.
Yes, it really is a business in and of itself. And with the sort of media landscape challenged a lot by declining ad revenue and, you know, a loss of print subscribers, there's a big chance for people to sort of seek out alternative revenue streams. And a lot of people are doing that with affiliate marketing. So you're seeing a huge growth in e-commerce articles that are showing up on legacy media brand sites and gift guides pegged to holidays like Christmas or Hanukkah or Mother's Day, for example, are big business for people who are doing online shopping and searching specifically for recommendations from people who are, you know, leaders in this space, whether that's, you know, the editors of women's magazines when it comes to fashion or that kind of thing.
And also, I should say here, not that I know this firsthand, but there are producers in this shop who tell me that Gwyneth Paltrow and Goop is a biggie.
Yes, she is probably the biggest and most fun gift guide that is published every year that rounds up some of the most spectacularly unuseful but amazing luxury products. The one for this year includes a week-long blimp ride to the North Pole.
Wow.
And then another thing she suggested was a $400 hunk of Parmesan cheese. So wow. These are things that are really only for people in a certain tax bracket. But for those of us who can't afford them, they're fun to just think about and look at.
I was just going to say, there's a little bit of voyeurism here, right?
Totally. It's sort of like materialism make-believe.
Yeah.
It's sort of like the e-commerce equivalent of like watching a reality TV show. Right. You feel like you have this healthy dose of like shock and horror and at how the other half does the holidays.
Right. Totally. Okay, so brass tacks here. What's your go-to gift guide? If I wanted to like actually find some good stuff and you were telling me where to go, where would you tell me to go?
Yeah, I have two. I think Wirecutters from the New York Times is really good. And I think The Strategist also for New York Magazine has some incredible gift guides. So those would be my two recs.
Excellent. Excellent. This interview has been personally useful to me. Jessica Roy at the New York Times, writing about gift guides. Jessica, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
This final note on the way out today, which whatever the Federal Reserve would like to believe, should allay any concerns that the labor market, while softening, is getting too soft. Saw this in the Wall Street Journal today that finance and accounting firms have already started recruiting for summer interns for the summer of 2025, as in a year and a half from now. Should you be a college student listening or parent of same? Direct your inquiries to Guggenheim Securities, the Royal Bank of Canada, Grant Thornton, and PricewaterhouseCoopers, among others. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Donna Tam is the executive editor. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have a great weekend, everybody. We will see you on Monday, all right? This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.